Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In recognition of the September 2015 visit of Pope Francis to the United States, Radio Curious presents a series of visits with Father Tom Rees, a member of the Society of Jesus. In this first visit, we discuss Father Rees's view of Pope Francis, the role of prayer, changes within the Catholic Church's view of marriage, and the possibility of opening the priesthood to women. Father Rees entered the Jesuits in 1962 and was ordained in 1974. Currently, he is a senior analyst with the National Catholic Reporter. He was appointed by President Obama to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, an independent, bipartisan, United States federal government commission that reviews the facts and circumstances of religious freedom violations and makes policy recommendations to the President, the Secretary of State, and Congress. Our guest host for this visit with Father Rees is Martha McCabe, a retired higher education legal counsel and civil rights attorney. Brought up as a Roman Catholic, she graduated from Jesuit Santa Clara University. As a novelist, she was a guest on Radio Curious in 2006. When Martha McCabe visited with Father Tom Rees on August 14, 2015, they began when she asked him what the election of Pope Francis indicates about the future direction of the Catholic Church and the papacy.
Well, I think that it's a recognition that the Catholic Church is no longer just a European institution. It's really a worldwide institution. In fact, the reality is that the Church has been growing in Africa and shrinking in Europe. This is really a very important recognition of reality, that now we're just not a European church, we're a church that's in every part of the world with bishops and clergy from those parts of the world. The second thing I would say is it's going to kind of change the orientation of the Catholic Church. In the past, we've had a stress on the concerns of the First World, the concerns of the Northern Hemisphere, the concerns of Europe. And now I think in the Church we're hearing the voice of the Global South, concerns about the poverty of the people in the Global South, concerns about the impact of globalization. A lot of the agenda items of Pope Francis come from him being from the South.
Why do you think the church is shrinking in Europe and growing in Africa?
Well, that's a very good question. I think that in Europe and North America, we've seen an increase in the number of people who are just simply unaffiliated with any religious group. In the United States, for example, one-third of people who were raised Catholics have left the church, and half of those have become unaffiliated. In fact, if the statistics continue in the same trend, we're going to have more unaffiliated people in the United States than we're going to have Catholics, and that's going to be absolutely extraordinary change.
That's an interesting, raised an interesting point. Why did you think that they leave the church?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. I think it's important to distinguish those people who leave the Catholic Church and become Protestants and those who leave the Catholic Church and become unaffiliated. Those who leave the Catholic Church and become Protestants do so because they don't their spiritual needs are not being met by the Catholic Church. This is what they tell us. They like the worship service in their new church. They like the stress that the Protestants put on the Bible. Another way of putting it is I think they find the Catholic Church boring. I think they find better preaching, better music, better worship services in the in many of the Protestant churches, especially in the evangelical churches. Catholics are not leaving the church to join the mainline, the Episcopal Church. two-thirds of those who leave the Catholic Church and join Protestant churches are joining evangelical churches. I think they're leaving more because of the style of the worship services than over theology, frankly.
Specifically, then, it sounds as though you're saying that Catholics are leaving the church because their spiritual needs can be better met elsewhere in their view.
That's what they're telling us. Our worship services are very dry. There are some parishes that have lively music and attractive, but, you know, it's nothing like you hear and see and experience in evangelical churches, where they put a lot of effort into music and into preaching.
One of the things that I really wanted to ask you, and I see that you were an editor of a catechism, is specifically about this, the issue of prayer and its role in the spiritual life of people, either within the Catholic Church or when they leave. What's your sense of that in the modern world, in our country?
You know, when you ask them, do you pray, people do respond and say, yes, they do pray. I think when people feel a need, when people have a sick member of the family, I think people still turn to prayer. And I think this is one of the reasons they go to church, is to get an experience of a closer experience of God, and to come to God with their needs, their hopes, their dreams, their concerns. Even people who don't go to church, we find them saying that, yes, they do pray during their day.
What actually does the act of prayer mean? How is it done?
There's a great variety. I think for most people, they turn to prayer when there's a great need, when they're asking for something. I think there are other forms of prayer also. I remember in the catechism when I was in grammar school, and the sisters taught us the different types of prayer, and they used that acronym, ACTS, adoration, contrition, thanksgiving, and supplication. I think most of us always are in the supplication. The prayer is a petition. We're always asking for something. And I think we can enrich our spiritual life if we use some of those other forms of prayer. For example, thanksgiving. When something good happens to us, when we're happy about something, we should also turn to God and give thanks. Of course, the Mass, the Eucharist that the Catholics celebrate, the word itself, Eucharist, means thanksgiving. So thanksgiving should be a big part of our prayer to God. I think we can also pray if we're sitting on the beach and we see a magnificent sunset and we recognize the awesomeness of God that we recognize through creation. And I think there we get into the prayer of adoration, of saying, God, you know, God is great. How wonderful He is. How magnificent.
For those who may not believe in God, could you describe God as you understand?
God, I think, is too big to describe. He's too big to put in a box. And I think we, each of us, experiences God in different ways during our lives. Some people experience Him as a parent, as a father or a mother. Other people experience Him as the creator of this universe in which we live. You know, most importantly, we need to experience Him as someone who loves us, who has compassion, who really cares for us, who is our friend. You know, a lot of people just pray asking God for something, or a lot of people just come to God saying how sorry they are for being sinners. Well, you know, we also have to experience God as loving, as compassionate towards us, and as someone we come to thank and someone that we just are in awe of, that we pray and worship to.
One of the things that strikes me, and I'm sure many people, in regarding this Pope, is that he seems to move easily in a world in which others have other views of a deity or, in fact, do not believe in a God. And I wonder if you could address how you see Francis as certainly a stalwart leader of the church, but also as a really, in my opinion, the first postmodern pope willing to live as a man in a pluralistic world where people have other beliefs.
I think it's part of his lived experience. You know, for example, as a young man, right after he got out of school and before he went to the seminary, he had a job as a chemist. And he was working, you know, his boss was a woman, and she was a communist. And they became very good friends, and were friends, you know, all their lives. This was a woman he had great respect for. She mentored him. She helped him as a young man. And he was very grateful to her. So, he was called a communist, and he kind of smiled and said, I know some people who are communists, and they're very good people. And I'm sure that he was thinking of this woman as someone like that. And, you know, and he also had experience of people from other religions. For example, he has a rabbi in Buenos Aires who's a very good friend of his, with whom he wrote a book the title of which is Of Heaven and Earth. And it was a dialogue between the two of them. And obviously they like each other very much and respect each other, you know, and they're not trying to convert each other. They're trying not telling each other that it's my way is the only way to God. Well, I think it's the recognition that the Catholic Church has had that the Spirit is alive everywhere in the world, not just in the Catholic Church. In fact, we can learn from people of other faith. There are wonderful dialogues actually happening throughout the world. For example, there are Benedictine monks that are in dialogue with Buddhist monks about prayer and meditation and this kind of thing. So there's a lot of these conversations and dialogues between religious groups going on around the world, and we're learning from each other. And I think this is wonderful, and I think this is the Pope supports this.
You're listening to an interview with Father Tom Rees, S.J., who is a senior analyst with the National Catholic Reporter. Our guest host for this interview is retired attorney and author Martha McCabe. This is Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel.
One of the things that strikes one of me in particular about this pope is that he now presides over a 1.2 billion adherent organization that does have a very significant, if you will, rule book regarding marriage and divorce and contraception and abortion and the appropriate understanding of people in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender communities. And, for example, with respect to evangelization, the proposed canonization of Junipero Serra has certainly struck chords here in California of people who find that extraordinary for a number of reasons. It seems, could you talk about this? I don't want to mischaracterize it as tension, but this relationship between this man, this pope, and his leadership of an organization that has taken and continues for doctrinal reasons to take these positions that leave many people on the outside.
Well, I think that this Pope, Pope Francis, is emphasizing certain aspects of Christianity and of Catholic teaching. He is putting a lot of stress on God's love for everybody. And I think this was kind of lost in some of the teachings in the past because of the vocabulary we've used, because of the way we've talked about things, of, you know, and categorized people as sinners. And I think, you know, his acknowledgement that we're all sinners, we're all loved and, you know, with compassion by God is a way of presenting this teaching in a different way, in a way that doesn't divide people but brings us all together, and recognizing that God is with all of us.
How does that square with the lack of the ability of women to ordain in the Catholic Church, which is the entry point into the hierarchy of the Church. It is true that the women religious teach and minister to people throughout the United States and the world, but if there is not a path to ordination and to further leadership positions, how can the Church be faithful to the mission that you set forth? Where is the compassion? Where is anything but exclusion when you cannot ordain women?
Well, I think this is certainly one of the most painful things in the Catholic Church today for many, many women. We've had great improvements in the role of women in the Church over the past 50 years. It's still not priesthood. This is something that the Pope, certainly John Paul and Benedict, felt they did not have the power to do. It was not something that they could do even if they wanted. I mean, that was their interpretation of the Scriptures and of the tradition of the Church. Many theologians dramatically disagree with that and feel that the priesthood should be open to women. This is certainly one of the biggest controversies in the Catholic Church today. I think the important thing here that I think Pope Francis can help us with is, how do we deal with this? How do we deal with disagreements in a family? The question is, can we have arguments? Can we have disagreements? Can we have disputes and still love one another and still be in the same family? Or are these disagreements so fundamental, so radical, that they tear us apart?
Well, when the organization pretermits the possibility of women's ordination, that is quite disheartening. And the other thing is, in connection with the child abuse in the Church, which is found to be pervasive and covered up by the hierarchy, I think many women and men of good faith and both inside and outside the Church think that if there were 50% of the bishops and archbishops of the American Church had been women, this never would have happened.
Well, I think, you know, certainly the sex abuse crisis, the abuse of children by priests in the Catholic Church was an absolute disaster, especially for these children. I think that the bishops, the Church, have to apologize, and continue to apologize and do penance for their failure to deal with this crisis more quickly.
And we haven't seen resignations, only under duress and only when the district attorneys or prosecutors were at the door. We haven't seen a personal assumption of responsibility, have we, in large numbers?
Well, I think that one of the tragedies here is that we didn't have more bishops stand up and say, I made a mistake. I take full responsibility. I didn't realize that what I was doing was so terrible and bad. I take full responsibility and I resign. I think if we'd had 30 or 50 bishops stand up and do that, we would be in a much different place in the Church today. We finally have seen under Pope Francis some bishops forced to resign. For example, the Bishop of Kansas City, Missouri, this year was forced to resign from being a bishop because he failed in his responsibility to protect children. You know, this is just the non-negotiable. You know, a bishop who doesn't do his job in protecting children has to resign.
Are you satisfied from your vantage point as a person who understands and studies the Church as an organization that everything that needs to be done has been done to prevent further abuse?
Oh, no. And I think, you know, if we get complacent on this, then we're in trouble. I think we have to continue to be vigilant. We have to continue to have programs that screen people who come into the seminary, people before ordination, programs to, you know, to make sure that every priest who is involved in abuse is immediately removed from the priesthood and never allowed to act as a priest again. We have to have programs of, you know, and programs of screening, background screening for people who work for the church, even volunteers. I mean, we have programs in parishes now. We have to have training programs for children and parents to help them recognize and prevent child abuse. This is something that's going to have to be ongoing. You know, instead of being part of the problem, the church has to be part of the solution to this huge problem of child abuse that we have in the United States.
One of the topics that's often associated with this one is the question of married priests. I'm not going to draw any causal connection here, but I would just like you to visit with us about your thoughts on the prospect for a married clergy in the Catholic Church.
I think this is one of the things that I think under Pope Francis is possible. You know, this was simply not even discussable during the last two papacies. I think it's something that now can be back on the table. It's very interesting, the book that the Pope wrote with his rabbi friend in Buenos Aires, where there was a chapter in which the rabbi said, "Hey, what's this business of priests not getting married, of celibacy?" And then, of course, Archbishop Bergoglio responded and, you know, talked about celibacy. When I read that chapter, one of the things I noticed was he kept saying, you know, "For now, celibacy is the rule of the church. For now, et cetera, et cetera." I think, frankly, he's open to change. I think he's open to an optional celibacy. But he's not going to do it. You know, it's not going to be an executive order from on high. That's just not the way he does things. What he wants is for this to bubble up from below. He had a bishop, for example, from the Amazon in Brazil who came to him and said, "I've got this huge, huge territory, you know, in the Amazon, and I don't have enough priests. I need to be able to ordain married priests." And the Pope told him, "Okay, go back to your bishop's conference and get them to ask for it." You know, and I think if some of the bishops' conferences around the world began to ask for permission to have a married clergy, I think he would be open to that.
And are you yourself open to that kind of change in the church?
Oh, absolutely, sure. I think it's absolutely necessary. We simply don't have enough priests to minister to the people. We know for a fact that the Catholic Church for about 1,000 years had a married clergy, and now for the last 1,000 years has had this rule of celibacy. This is a law of the church. This is not doctrine. This can change. There's no question about that. And I think it's time to make that change.
With respect to a not unrelated issue in terms of social topics, the church has been under, as you said, the previous two popes, particularly, I would say, strident about the sinful nature of sexual relationships between unmarried partners, as well as sex between people of the same sex, gender. I wonder if you see any changes, aside from pastoral gentleness, perhaps, in the church's stance on these issues.
Mm-hmm. First of all, the way we talk about these things is changing. We used to just say they're living in sin. I mean, you know, we put them in this little box, and they were living in sin. They're going to go to hell. Well, we don't talk about it that way. It was very interesting at the Synod of Bishops last October when bishops from all over the world came to discuss the topic of the family, and these issues came up. And what you heard from people and what you hear from Pope Francis is their lived experience is telling them that these people are not bad people. You know, Pope Francis, as Archbishop of Buenos Aires, would go down into the slums. He'd meet the people. He'd listen to them. He'd go into their homes and sit and sip tea and listen to their stories. And, you know, most of these people were in what the Catholic Church would regard as irregular marriages because of divorce, or they were never married in the church, or whatever it was. So they would be categorized, traditionally as sinners. Well, but what he found were people who wanted to be part of the church. And his attitude is that the church should not be a disciplinarian. Rather, the church should be like a field hospital that takes care of the wounded. When the wounded come in, you don't start berating them. Why did you get shot? You care for them. You nourish them. You bind up the wounds and help them. And that's what he wants the church to do. The second thing that was noted at the Synod of Bishops was a number of bishops who got up and talked about these families as having very good qualities in them. Families, that are really practicing virtues of courage, of fidelity, of care, of love for one another. You can't talk about these as being evil when you see these kinds of good things happening in these families. For example, one bishop got up and talked about the experience of gay people who, when one of the partners gets sick with HIV, and the care and compassion and love and, instead of just saying, goodbye, you're sick, I'm out of here, the caring, the loving care. I mean, these are good people. There is grace here. There is, wherever there is love, that God is present. And so we have to, we have to think about these things and talk about these things in a different way than I think we did in the past.
You've been listening to part one of a series with Father Tom Rees, a member of the Society of Jesus and a senior analyst with the National Catholic Reporter. He's also a member of the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom, appointed by President Obama. Our guest host for this interview is retired attorney and author Martha McCabe, whose 2006 Radio Curious interview with me may be found on our website. The book Father Tom Rees recommends, described at the end of part two of this series, is Laudato Si, Pope Francis's encyclical on climate change. This program was recorded on August 14, 2015. Radio Curious has over 500 archive editions on our website, radiocurious.org, with new programs published weekly. You may stream, download, subscribe to our podcast service, and share them as you wish. They're all free. We appreciate your thoughts, ideas, and comments about our programs and enjoy hearing from you. The email is curious@radiocurious.org. The phone is 707-462-6541. Christina Onnestad is the assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.